This show is a part of the Podnuts Network. Find more shows like this at www.podnuts.com.
On the edge of real and cyberspace, there's one place you can go.
Welcome to Nightwise.com.
Nightwise.com.
Tired of choosing between Macs, Linux, and OS X? Listen to the Nightwise.com podcast and learn how to slide from operating system to operating system using our hack tips and tweaks for cross-platform geeks. Tune tech into your way of life and let technology work for you instead of the other way around.
On the edge of real and cyberspace, there's one place you can go, and you found it. Welcome to Nightwise.com, the one and only podcast with hacks, tips, and tweaks for cross-platform geeks. Whether you're a Windows, Linux, Mac, iOS, Android, or Chrome OS user, we have the tips and tricks you need to tune tech into your way of life and let that technology work for you. My name's Nightwise, and in the coming episodes, KW907, FOSDEM 2015, I'll be your host. For more information and the show notes, head on over to the website www.knighthwise.com, where you'll find the Nightwise.com media feed. Subscribe to that feed and get all of the Nightwise.com content delivered to your podcatcher automatically, letting technology work for you. Hey guys and girls, welcome to KW907, the Nightwise.com podcast for hacks, with hacks, tips, and tweaks for cross-platform geeks. And today we are going to focus a little bit on the Linuxy side of those cross-platform geeks. This weekend was FOSDEM, a free and open source conference in Brussels. It's actually a big, big gathering of all kinds of Linux geeks and gurus who want to talk open source. And there are a lot of talks, there are a lot of projects being demoed, and there are also a lot of booths there of several distros and projects and God knows what. If it's free, it's open source. If it's Linux, and if it has a very, very nerdy geek swing to it, it's probably at FOSDEM. So, this weekend I packed up my microphone and I went on over to FOSDEM to do some interviews. And those are going to be the meat of the matter of KW907. You'll get the interviews back-to-back and I'll be back after the back-to-back when we're done doing the back-to-back. Anyway, here is the meat of the matter, the interviews at FOSDEM 2015. We continue our talks at FOSDEM, this time with Michael, and I am at the greenest booth of the entire site here today. I'm of course at the OpenSUSE booth, and we are looking at, if I'm not mistaken, OpenSUSE 13.02?
Yep, this is our latest stable release. It was released, I think, in October. And yeah, you can see it. We have two computers, one running KDE, one running GNOME. We are supporting multiple desktops by default. If you just install it, by default it will install KDE, but we have a strong GNOME community as well, so you can install GNOME, XFCE, whatever you like. And actually the more interesting point about OpenSUSE is that we actually have a rolling distro nowadays. It's called Tumbleweed. And we did quite some improvements in the way we do packaging and how our distribution works. There will be talk by Stefan Kulo about it today, later. And we do automatic testing, and we are making sure that our running distro is actually working. And all the packages have to pass not only unit tests, but also some integration tests. It has to be possible to actually install distribution and boot it up before we actually merge the updates to the rolling distribution.
So the rolling distro in this case is not crashing with the latest packages?
Yeah, it's stable and you should be able to boot it up, you should be able to install it, you should be able to run GIMP or LibreOffice. So for the mainstream users it should be pretty fine. You might find some breakage in some leaf packages that are not that widely used because we don't have test coverage for them. But if you find that, then you can always submit the test cases for even your favorite packages. So that's one of the greatest news that we have since release of 13.2. At that time, we had some semi-rolling distro that was always based on the stable release. And we had a development distribution called Factory, and we merged both of them thanks to these staging projects and automatic testing. So nowadays we have just one stable rolling.
Okay, now for people who come from a different operating system, let's say they're coming from I don't know, from the Mac, from Windows, from some other version of Linux, like for example a Ubuntu user or a Mint user. Do they need to get used to SUSE doing things different? I mean, do you have things like software centers and stuff?
Well, for people coming from different distribution or different operating systems, one big advantage that we have as a distribution is Yast, which is our configuration center where you can pretty much do everything. You can do software install, you can set up basic services, create users, and basically all the administrative tasks you can do from graphical user interface. Yast is actually really cool. It's based on libyy, which is a cool library that allows us to create one user interface and then compile it. Well, there's some plugins, but the important part is that we have same user interface for Qt, GTK, so it looks natively in both KDE and GNOME. It looks nice. And it also has mCurses plugin. So you have this powerful tool that you can that will help you do anything, even over the SSH and on terminal.
Okay, so it looks really good. It comes with KDE. It comes with GNOME. It's RPM based, right?
Yep.
Okay, so where can people find it, and what versions can they download?
If you go to www.opensuse.org, there is a big Get It Now button, and then you can download 13.2, which is our latest release. And we have x86 and x86 64 and 32-bit versions. You can also download there not only full installation DVD, which is pretty big, but we also have a net install, which is pretty small on the other hand, but requires a network connection. And there are also 1 gig live images for both KDE and GNOME, so you can play with them. And there is also rescue image with XFCE.
Ah, so if my computer breaks, I can get a rescue image from OpenSUSE to save my data.
Yeah. Okay. I had to do it once because I had some problems with ButterFS. By the way, we are using ButterFS nowadays as a default. It's not as scary as it sounds because actually
ButterFS is a way the data is organized on your disk, like FAT32 or EXT3 or 4, and then you have ButterFS, which is a little bit controversial.
Yeah, ButterFS is a bleeding edge technology. Well, it's bleeding edge for a few years now, but it has really advanced features like online compression, it has snapshots, it can do RAID by itself and stuff like that. And we actually came in 13.2, it's a default setting, ButterFS. But to make it stable, we actually disable some features by default, and we are enabling only a subset of the features of ButterFS to make sure that you don't lose your data.
So you've got the speed, but you don't have the danger.
Exactly.
Okay. Thank you very much. We will be taking a look at OpenSUSE because it's really nice and it's green. And hey, you have your own beer.
Yeah.
That helps. They have their own beer, ladies and gentlemen. Talk about that is a package that I've not found in any other distro so far. Thank you very much for talking to us, and good luck on FOSDEM.
Thank you.
I'm here at FOSDEM at the booth of Jitsi. Jitsi, which was something that was immediately standing out, because instead of just having a table and some stickers, these guys have a lounge, they have candy, they have pillows, they have cool developers, and they have a TV, and it's like the cool kids hangout. Now, I'm here with Ingo from Jitsi. What is Jitsi?
Well, Jitsi is actually two things. We have a desktop client, which is for secure audio and video calls and secure chatting. And the other part is a WebRTC video conference. And before we continue, I have to forward the nice words to our friends from the real-time lounge, which is XMPP as well, which share our booth.
Okay, and XMPP are the ones that are the workers of the magic behind stuff like Google Chat and stuff, right?
Well, it's not actually only Google Chat, but Google Chat uses it, yes.
So Jitsi is a cross-platform secure audio video client. It's like Skype on steroids, if I can be so rude.
It's like Skype on steroids because it's secure and we perform end-to-end encryption of the audio and video calls, so you can be rest assured that no government can listen in even if they wanted to or have core permissions.
So on what operating system does the client run?
Linux, obviously, because we are at open source FOSDEM, but it also runs very well on Mac and Windows.
Okay, so you have a cross-platform secure end-to-end audio and video client, which is really cool. Is it peer-to-peer or are we talking direct connections?
If possible, then it is peer-to-peer, but you always need a server for the metadata exchange, which can be your XMPP server. And, if it's possible, it establishes a direct connection. If it's not possible, it tries to use relays.
Okay, and what kind of, you do audio, you do video, what kind of resolutions are we talking about? What kind of content can you share?
You can share files if you do chatting, and if you do a video conference, it's basically what your bandwidth can give you or your webcam resolution, so that's not a technical limit that we impose.
Okay, and then you also have a web, and this is really cool. I mean, it's the whole thing runs inside a browser tab. That makes it really interesting because that adds yet another platform to the list of stuff that Jitsi runs on.
Yeah, lacking resources of developers, it's unfortunately not yet compatible with the desktop client, but you can just enter the URL meet.jit.si, and there you have your video conferences. Just share the URL with your peers, and there you go.
And you don't need an account?
No, you don't need an account.
All right, what was that URL again? Because this is really interesting. This is a cross-platform, web-enabled, no account required, secure web conference, right?
Yes, well, the web conference is not end-to-end secured. You need to trust the video bridge, which does the relay of the video streams, but it is encrypted. So as long as you trust the operator of the system, you're secure anyway.
Okay, and people can run it on any OS. Where can they find it?
The only limitation that you have that it's currently Chrome or Chromium only, because that's the only browser that supports multiple WebRT streams at the same time. But Firefox development is on the way on the side of Firefox, so we hopefully can bring that this year as well.
And operating system-wise, Mac, Linux, Windows, the whole shebang?
The whole shebang, yeah, even Android tablets.
Fantastic. Okay, where can people find you guys?
Sorry?
Where can people find you guys and download your client?
Jitsi.org.
Okay, thank you very much, Ingo, and good luck on FOSDEM.
Thank you.
We continue our interviews at FOSDEM 2015 here in Brussels, and I'm talking to Joost at the Debian booth. Now, being a little bit of a Debian user myself, or a Debian derivative user myself, I thought I have to talk to you guys. Joost, tell me, why the frack is Debian so popular?
Because it's good.
Well, yeah, okay, okay, thank you. That was it, ladies and gentlemen. Because it's good, but it's been so massively forked lately, you know, with Ubuntu and all the derivatives. Is Debian easier to use than RPM distros? Why is that?
Well, maybe it's easier to fork. Sorry, what's the question exactly?
So why is Debian, let's say, why is Debian more popular than Red Hat?
Actually, I don't know if it is, but okay, I can tell you what are the good things about Debian. I think my personal view is that the good thing about Debian is Debian policy. So there are very strict rules about what packages should we adhere to before being accepted in the Debian archive, and that gives a base standard quality line, which is, I think, pretty high. And that's one of the things.
So a lot of derivatives are being done out of Debian, like, for example, Ubuntu is just one of them. And a lot of development is done on those platforms. Is anything coming back?
Yeah, I think it goes, I'm pretty sure it goes both ways. So patches go from Debian to Ubuntu and from Ubuntu to Debian. In the past, there have been some troubles with how to cooperate and how to interact with each other. But I think now it's doing pretty fine. And well, more Ubuntu users means more users of Debian software, so it's benefit.
So one of the things that I'm always wondering about, lately I've been catching in the news a lot of talk about systemd. And the near Second World War that's going to be happening in the Debian world. Now, for people who don't know what systemd is and why nerds are literally looking for firearms and nuclear extermination devices to wipe each other out or even fork something, what's systemd and what's all the fuss about?
Well, the war is over. Systemd will be the default init system in the upcoming Debian release. What is systemd? Systemd is lots of things. One thing with it aims to be is a replacement for System 5 init system, which is the old style of booting Unix and Linux systems. And it's old, but it's, yeah, there are features lacking which you need on modern systems. So, well, then there's Upstart and systemd. So there are different ways to tackle that problem, and systemd won the game, it seems. And yeah, it's new, and it's people have to adjust the way of working, especially system administrators. For a regular user, will not really notice any difference, I suppose.
So it's basically a core component of Linux. It's more than Debian, or core component of Debian.
Linux.
It's a core component of Linux, and it's changing.
Yeah, it wants to be a core component of Linux. You can run Linux without systemd still. And yeah, it's an inner system. It deals with booting the system and starting services and starting your desktop manager and all that kind of stuff.
So in the Debian community as well, there's been a lot of talk going on about people don't liking it and even wanting to fork Debian. My God, that's never happened before. We've never forked Debian.
I have to end up.
They're giving away his money, so let them.
What was the question?
So there was now I lost track. Now,
what was the war?
Yeah,
about?
There was. What was the war about? They were going to war fork Debian. Nobody done that before.
Yeah, it was a very heated debate. But on the other hand, we have, within Debian, we have these debates every like 5 years or something. It's like a tradition. And I don't know if the debate was that much more tough than previous debates, but well, whatever. Why are people so passionate about it? Because it people are used to Unix, doing things the Unix way, will have to adjust their way of working.
So it's basically a kids get off my lawn scenario that people have a hard time.
In a way, and there are also some good things about the old Unix way, which people, I think, generally agree about. And systemd is sad to not adhere to these old standard ways of doing things. And in a way it's true, and in another way it's not true. And a lot of the first you heard about the systemd fighters was just not true. So, yeah. And it's also a perceived thing, and
it's sensation. It's a juicy story. I mean,
yeah. I mean, people are fighting each other, so that's good for press.
Yeah. So for our users, we have a cross-platform scope of users who use different kinds of Linux distros, different distros, and even non-Linux operating systems. Is Debian the distro for grown-up Ubuntu users?
I don't know. In Debian, you have more choice. And if you run a Debian system, it's easier to adjust it to your own taste. But if you don't care, and if you just want to browse the web or whatever, just get your stuff done and not really interested in the operating system and tweaking that, then I think Ubuntu is a very nice choice. But if you want to go further and change things and look under the hood, is that
under the hood.
Looking under the hood, then Debian is more attractive, I suppose.
Okay, so it's a perfectly obvious question, but where can people find Debian?
Debian.org.
And what's your latest distro? And what's your latest version?
We plan to... I forgot the name. Jesse. We plan to release Jesse soonish when it's ready, as we say. And we'll have 7D as the default in the system. And new versions of GNOME and web browsers and all this kind of stuff. So, yeah.
Okay, thank you very much. Enjoy FOSDEM here in Brussels and enjoy the Belgian beer.
Thank you very much. Goodbye.
I'm here at FOSDEM with Jason from Diaspora, the one and only open source clone of the Zuckerberg Foundation that wants to know your girlfriend's underwear size and if you could please share it with the world. Jason, what is Diaspora?
Diaspora is basically a social network, but it's also a social network software. So you can run your own instance of Diaspora, and that instance will join the rest of the network to form not really a Facebook clone, but let's say a social network.
So you can run your, so it's basically a social network that you can run yourself, and you can tie your node to the rest of the Diaspora nodes to join the global Diaspora.
Yeah, it's we sometimes compare the way the it's a federated social network, so we compare it to how, for example, email works. If you want to share with someone a private message, then you know their Diaspora ID, which looks like an email. Then you just type that in and start sharing with that person. And the information is only shared with the server that the user exists in, so the rest of the network doesn't get that information. And then there's the other aspect of public posts.
So it's like an email server and a bulletin board system tied into a social network. So what does a Diaspora profile look like? I mean, do you have essential things like, for example, profile picture, information, Candy Crush invites?
No Candy Crush.
We like it already.
Well, yeah, profile picture. You can set some hashtags to describe yourself so other people can find you easier. You can upload photos, post status messages. You can format the messages with Markdown syntax. So it's good for bloggers, for example. And with polls, and you can add your location to posts. It's pretty much, I'd say it's a slash between Facebook, Twitter, and Tumblr in like the feature set. And
what do you need to get on Diaspora? I think a browser is the essentials. Do you also have clients?
We have a browser, desktop view, and then we have a mobile view, which is optimized for mobile devices. So basically all you need is a web browser. There are no official clients from the project. There's a few unofficial like a command line client, so you can use it to post messages from cron if you want to, but basically a desktop.
Okay, now what do you need to get on Diaspora, and where can you find it?
You can find it by going to diasporafoundation.org, and there's a join us button which will get you to a list of servers you can join. So basically you need to choose where you want to host your data. There's a lot of, we currently know of at least 130 servers. Most of them are open for registration, so anyone can try it at any time and create a profile and have a look what it looks like. But then there's the other aspect of Diaspora that you can host it yourself, like for example, OwnCloud. If you want to host your own social network, then you just go to our installation instructions in our project site and check out those. It's quite easy to install on any Linux platform.
Okay, thank you very much. We'll be checking out Diaspora because we're kind of sick. You don't have Candy Crush. That's the differentiator right there. Thank you very much, guys, and good luck on FOSDEM.
Thank you.
Working hard at FOSDEM this year, we are at the booth of CentOS. They have a great t-shirt. 10 years of CentOS is right in front of me. I'm here with Johnny, one of the, I think you're one of the developers of CentOS, correct?
Yes, I was one of the first people to become part of the project, and I'm now the release manager for CentOS.
Okay, so basically you tell them you're the man that decides which OS or which version rolls out. Now, can you tell me a little bit about CentOS? Just what is it? Where does it come from?
Okay, CentOS basically is the rebuild of the source code from Red Hat Enterprise Linux. We get the source code when they release it, and we rebuild it in our build system, so it's not the same. It's not exactly the same as Red Hat Enterprise Linux. It's just binaries built from the same source code.
So what makes CentOS so special, and especially it's also very popular these days?
Well, one of the things is that we have a long lifetime for the releases. That makes it especially good for people in enterprises who want a long lifetime with security support for their operating system.
So is it geared towards the desktop operating system or the server operating system?
Well, it's mostly really based for servers. We do have a good desktop system, but because of the long lifetime, we don't get upgrades to the desktop as much as some of the other distributions. So things are there for a long period of time, but if you're looking at, you know, the newest desktop features, we don't normally have that, except for right at the beginning of our release cycle.
Okay, so a long, stable server operating system is something that people who want to use CentOS are surely going to get out of it. Graphically, what kind of desktop are you guys using?
Well, we currently have three active versions of CentOS. Version 5, which is based on a GNOME 2 desktop, an older GNOME 2 desktop. CentOS 6, which is based on a newer, like a 2.10 GNOME desktop, and then the version 7, the latest version, is actually based on a GNOME 3 desktop. So we have all three.
Okay, and you ship with the standard packages, the standard browsers. So basically somebody wanting to get started with a very stable and secure server but also desktop operating system can go straight to your latest version, which is?
Version 7, yes. And we do have, the version 7 actually is relatively recent desktop. And the good thing, if you're looking for a stable desktop, something that you're going to deploy and keep for a long period of time, and you're not looking to update, and you don't want to update every 6 months or every year to a brand new version of the opera or the desktop, then it is still helpful for some usually that's enterprise level desktops where you write an app and you want it to work for several years, not and you can't afford to upgrade your desktop.
Yeah, if you don't want to do the release cycle and re-image all of your systems or see your applications break and want something that's really rock solid and stable, then it's your pick. So where can people find CentOS? Where can people find CentOS?
Okay, yes. CentOS is at www.centos.org. We have download links there. Actually, we got a fairly new redesign of the website, so it doesn't look like it's from, you know, last century now. But it's a fairly decent site. Should be easy to find. You can download the ISOs directly or torrents if that's the way you want to download. And that's faster from some places. But we have 500 or so mirrors all over the world, easy to get and use.
Okay, thank you very much, and good luck on FOSDEM.
Okay, thank you.
We're here at FOSDEM at the table that has a bunch of onions on it. So especially something that has interested us. We are, of course, the booth of the Tor project. I'm talking to Opie from the Tor project. Opie, for the people who are completely oblivious to any forms of privacy or anonymization, what is Tor?
Tor is a network that provides you anonymization and privacy and non-tracking solution. It's called Tor, like the onion routing, because your connection is routed through three servers that acts like an onion peel. So basically, the website that you visit doesn't know who you are, and your internet service provider doesn't know the website that you visit.
So basically you're anonymizing in and you're coming out at a random point online. So the website that you're visiting has no idea where you're coming from, but you don't have an idea where you're exiting the internet either.
Completely no idea. That's it.
So why use Tor?
Because you care of your privacy, so you don't want an advertising company to track you down by your IP address and your location to tell you that some pretty girl near you want to talk to you. You can use Tor if you are in a country that censors internet. Yesterday I saw a journalist from Turkey that say thanks for Tor, because with Tor, we can access Twitter, and with Twitter, we can access, we can know where the police are. And basically, Twitter was censored in Turkey at this time. So you can use Tor for your own privacy. If you are in a like Western country, but mostly it serves people in other country that censor internet.
So Tor is free. It doesn't require a registration. What do you need to use it?
You need to install the Tor browser that you can find in the torproject.org website. It's completely free, it's completely open source and trustable. And you can run it on Windows, macOS or Linux. It's just a Tor browser. It's basically a Firefox modified to ship in Tor. So you download it, you click on Launch Tor Browser, and you're in. You get a Firefox with your regular tools, your tabs, your stuff, and you browse through Tor.
Okay, so thank you very much. We'll be looking at Tor to anonymize and randomize our internet traffic. Is Tor any good for Netflix?
Is Tor good for Netflix? I don't have answer for that. Because of Netflix, what does Netflix do?
So sometimes you want to stream a video and you want to exit in the US so that you can get all the US videos.
You can't choose where you exit with Tor. You can say I want to exit in US or in France or in Belgium. It's completely random and you can force the circuit. So no, for that kind of use, just use a proxy or stuff like that. But.
Okay, thank you very much and good luck on FOSDEM today.
Thanks. Have a good day.
I'm here at FOSDEM 2015 in Brussels, and I'm here with Johan of the Puppet organization. Johan, I was immediately drawn to your booth because you have these cool t-shirts for your sysadmins that say, I pulled the strings around here. That really got my attention. So tell me, what is Puppet?
Puppet is a central configuration management tool. And what we do is we describe in code how we want our infrastructure to look like. And Puppet will install that and manage that configuration. So that's in two words what Puppet is.
So basically you're a system administrator, you want to deploy a bunch of servers, and instead of getting a whole bunch of CDs and walking around in a cold server room, you just write it in Puppet and Puppet does it for you?
Yes, that's right. So the first thing you do is provisioning, and that's just a small image with one Puppet agent on it. And if it's installed, Puppet does its work, and in a short time we have a fully functional server, fully configured how we want it.
So I kind of almost got a black eye by mentioning a Windows product here, but I kind of compared it to, it's like SMS for servers.
Yeah, that's correct, but it does it better.
I assume, of course. Now, what kind of servers do you guys deploy?
The most things, it's our Linux servers. Also, it supports AUX, BSD, Solaris, so the most Unix flavors. It also manages Windows. So what we deploy is, well, any server you have, database server, web servers, any server you manage, you do it with Puppet.
And on what kind of hardware are we talking here? Are you going on pure metal or VMs or in the cloud?
It's both. It's pure bare metal and any virtualization. It doesn't matter. It's just as soon as you can provision a thing, install a Puppet agent, then you can manage it with Puppet.
So basically, if you want to set up a high-quality streaming porn site and you only have half an hour to do it, Puppet is the tool to deploy the servers to make it work.
Yes, of course.
See? You know, you always get something out of these interviews. Now, Puppet is open source.
Yeah.
Where can people find you and find documentation about you? Because I think that system administrators would be really interesting, because I see you don't only do deployment, you do also do reporting, you do monitoring. It's basically your automated sysadmin.
Yeah, that's right. What we do is we automate everything, and that's the nature, because sysadmins are lazy by nature, so we automate everything. In the beginning, we did that with writing our own scripts. But now infrastructures become much, much bigger and the demands are much higher. We have to deploy much faster. In the beginning, if it took a week, it was okay. Now it took 5 minutes. Our bosses are mad because it took too long.
So where can people go to find out more about Puppet?
The company behind Puppet is Puppet Labs. And if you go to puppetlabs.com, you will find any documentation you need. And they provide also learning VMs and tutorials to get your first experience with Puppets. What I'm doing here is representing the Puppet user groups. At the moment, there are about 50 user groups around the world. And I'm presenting the Belgian one here at Vosden.
Okay, so thank you very much. Good luck with Puppet. And if I ever need to deploy 50 high-speed, high-dev porn servers, I will immediately know where to go. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
And that's all we have time for this week on Nightwise.com, KW907, FOSDEM 2015. I had a great time going to FOSDEM. At first, I didn't really know what to expect, but everybody was super friendly. All the people at the booths took their time to talk to me and do the interviews and explain stuff to me. And it was really, really cool to walk around and actually see the developers that make the open source software that we use every single day. Because you hear things about, you know, community and developers, but who are these people? So, you know, walking around there really made me realize who these people were. It put faces to names, and it also put kind of a general idea in my head, like, this is, you know, these are the people that make open source work. So very cool to hang out there. I was by no means as technically savvy as many of the people who were walking around there, because there were some brilliant, brilliant men and women doing their stuff there. But I had a great time going to FOSDEM nonetheless. I'll be back next week with the next episode of KW908. That will be the next Nightwise.com podcast. And until then, you know where to go. Nightwise.com is where you'll find the show notes for this episode. And of course, don't forget to subscribe. Go to nightwise.com/subscribe and paste the RSS feed into your favorite podcatcher to let technology work for you and get all of the nightwise.com content to your podcatcher automatically. We really, really would appreciate if you could subscribe, or even if you could let your friends subscribe. The more listeners, the merrier. You know how the mantra goes. If you like the show, share it. That's all we ask. We don't ask for donations or money, and we don't give you ads. We just, you know, do what we like. And if you like it, share it with others. Twitter is also somewhere, some place where we hang out. Nightwise.com/Twitter, Nightwise for Twitter, Nightwise.com/Facebook for Facebook, and of course the Google Plus community over at Nightwise.com/Google Plus, all one word. As for me, I'm going to tinker a little bit more with some of the interesting Linux distros that I picked up over at FOSDEM, and see if I can, you know, find some content to make a new show about it. Until then, until next time, I'll be tinkering with that. And remember, you know, let technology work for you instead of the other way around. See ya.
You have been listening to the Nightwise.com podcast, the show with hacks, tips, and tweaks for cross-platform geeks. Send your feedback, questions, or start your own personal flame war by contacting us directly on feedback@nightwise.com, or following us on Twitter, Facebook, or Google+. You can support the show by sharing it with your friends or writing us a nice iTunes review at www.nightwise.com/iTunes. Or, if you have some credits to spend, click the PayPal button on the Nightwise.com website to help us pay the bills. Just remember, there is real life outside cyberspace! but it's not all that important.